This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Wells Tech is back live and on the air. This is episode 414 for Tuesday, October 13th, 2015. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Central Time. And joining me as usual to do this little podcast we call Wells Tech, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. It's Sally Draper and Marvin. I want to introduce you to the first ever Wells Tech Orange 3D printed Marvin. So he had to come along for a ride today on the show. We're excited to get Wells Tech Orange plastic at our house.
I have no such 3D magic at my location. I do have a story to tell, though. Kind of a neat story from the week. It's kind of where the power of social networks meets. You'll never think this kind of thing ever happens. So on what day was it? It wasn't yesterday. It was Monday. Yesterday was Monday.
Which happened to be yesterday. You know,
same thing. On Monday, yeah. I got a call from the police department from Folsom, California, which is, you know, the famous prisons out there. Not too far from where I grew up, in fact. So I got this call on my cell phone from a police officer there in Folsom wondering if, who, first of all, making sure I was Martin Spriggs, but wondering if I had lost a senior class ring.
Oh, my goodness.
Because they had found, apparently, a ring, which I'm pretty sure I lost my senior year in high school, either lost or had stolen. I think I left it probably sitting on a locker room bench or something, and you know, I went back and it was gone. I probably had the ring all of about 3 months. I wasn't overly happy that this happened. Wow. But fortunately, I had my initials in it, and it had the year. So this officer, enterprising man he was, looked it up somehow online or, you know, got a hold of a yearbook, found that there weren't too many people. I had about 250 people in my class, but weren't too many with the initials MAS in the yearbook, and then went online, found my contact information. Sent me a picture of the ring so I could verify it, and yes, indeed, it was a ring that I had lost 37 years ago.
So pretty amazing. Congratulations.
What is lost has been found. It's probably worth nothing, but yeah, and I hadn't probably thought about it in 36 years, so this was this is really a surreal conversation I was having with this police officer. So
it is a small world, huh?
Isn't that something? Yeah. So
it is.
So he found my cell phone number. I'm not hard to find if you do a search on the internet for me, but good thing that he did. And I'm looking forward to seeing that old ring again. So that's my little story about things you really wouldn't believe. So
the wonders of technology, huh?
Yep, exactly. So get my old relic back. One piece. It looked kind of beat up. Apparently it was on the person of a 29-year-old lady out there someplace, and you know, she wasn't supposed to be in receipt of that kind of stolen property, but I don't know what will happen to her, but I'm going to get my ring back. Pretty cool.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
Definitely.
All right, but we're not here to talk about social networks, rings, locker room.
Marvin.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to talk about project management because this is the week of the month that we write another chapter in our book, With All Your Heart, that we're calling it, Project Management for Churches, Schools, and Faith-Based Organizations. Those of you that were with us about a month ago heard us talk about our introduction. We did our introductory chapter, Chapter 1. Now we're getting into a little bit more meat, and we're talking in Chapter 2 about brainstorming, a little more project planning, project requirements, and some of the tools that you can use to put all that together. Sally, I think we're hitting our stride a little bit. I'm really happy with how this chapter turned out this time.
I'm excited for the book concept, Martin, because I know that you and I looked as we were preparing for this season of podcasting for something along these lines, and I think it's kind of an area that we didn't have project management type resources for faith-based organizations. So hopefully it will turn into something that's very useful. We're putting it together in an online format to start with. We're using Microsoft's Sway tool, which I think people will really enjoy. It's very compatible with whatever screen you're looking at it on. And ultimately our goal, hopefully, is to publish it in actual print book format at the end of the process. So we'll see how it all develops.
Yep. So let's walk through a couple of the highlights. We obviously aren't going to read the chapter. That's for you guys to be able to do. But a couple of the highlights in this particular chapter, which kind of we're talking about what I call the discovery phase of the project, and trying to determine, and we get back to God's word, of course, and God's will, what is it God wants you to do? That can happen in your personal life. That can happen in your life as a leader in a congregation or a school or faith-based organization. It really comes down to the question, what exactly does God want me to do right now? So it's really all about stewardship. So when we talk about discovery, it's trying to discover what it is you as a person working in a church or school or for a church or school or related to those projects should be doing. What are the projects that you should be doing?
And you know, Martin, I just had a great time thinking through this because I'm actually serving on a board of directors for a faith-based organization for the local resale shop here that benefits our Lutheran High School and other organizations. And mm-hmm. And you know, it just kind of all came together for me. Like, we could really benefit from not just necessarily doing the things we do every month and every quarter and every year, but actually taking a step back and considering all the things that are on our plate and what priorities they have and who should be involved in them and how much time they take. Yep. And whether we should be doing them at all. So
every project is not created equal. And I think sometimes we in these organizations think that way. Well, because we did it this year, we'll do it next year. And because we did this way, we'll do it this way again. Mm-hmm. And never a thought of, you know, should we be doing it at all? What does God want us to be doing? Maybe he doesn't want us to be doing this right now. Just because we did it last year doesn't necessarily mean we should be doing it this year or doing it the same way. So there's a whole project selection discussion that needs to be had. And I call it what in business terms you'd call it a project portfolio. What is it? What makes up the suite or the set or subsets of projects that you're going to do in any given year? And there's a selection process, a way you go about trying to figure out all that stuff.
It's a little bit of head work where we're used to kind of just jumping in with both feet and getting started and making things happen. You almost have to slow down a little bit and spend the time thinking through it, doing some brainstorming, organizing, like I said, all the different projects, not just the one that's the project of the day or whatever. And sometimes that head work can be a little intimidating and not as easy as you'd think it would be.
Yep. So what we suggest in the book is an annual or biannual process where projects are all brought to the table. You know, so a project request is brought to the table and trying to justify each of those projects. So each project would have an owner, and you're bringing all these projects together and you're kind of brainstorming what these could or should be. You're evaluating maybe how difficult they are, how much impact they will have on the organization, how many man or woman hours are needed, what's their budget impact. And once you begin to look at all of them together and maybe even put them on a calendar so you're determining when all these happen, you may come to the conclusion that if we do all of these, let's say, you know, these first quarter projects that we're thinking of, we're probably not going to be able to do any of them really well because we're spread too thin. We just don't have enough focus and they're all going to suffer. So maybe there's a selection process, but you won't get to that point until you bring all of these together to figure out which ones are we really going to focus on.
So as you're reading the book, you'll see an example embedded there of this project portfolio concept, where just showing a few of the fields that you might include in your portfolio, where you're listing out all the things. And as you said, Martin, maybe meeting on an annual basis or every half year or whatever it may be to look ahead at what projects are coming up and determine if you really do need to include it as part of your portfolio. Maybe a time for a quick mention of all this lovely paper I have on my desk, because you know how much I love paper. One of the things that we included in the book, you'll find links there, are to some templates. So if you want to do a project portfolio, you can actually download a template and fill in the blanks, so you don't even have to invent what all the columns need to be or whatever, but we give you a starting point in that way.
Yep. We give you a project request form that individuals can fill out, bring to this meeting, and this is not necessarily just, you know, the church leaders meeting. This is anybody who might be involved in all kinds of projects, VBS project, who are running maybe a senior outing, lots of different kinds of things that could be brought to the table that all should be kind of on the table. And then we begin to talk a little bit about one very important aspect of those meetings, and that's the brainstorming process. Using that brain power, like you mentioned, putting your thinking caps on and maybe evaluating a project that you're not all that familiar with, taking a look at it, asking hard questions, maybe brainstorming with another person who knows the project well, saying, well, have we thought about this or what about that or why do we do it this way, so that you're kind of sharpening the focus on the important things and trying to make it better every year rather than just kind of going by the checklist or script that, hey, we did it this way last year, it worked the last year, let's do it the same way this year and hope it works again.
Martin, it's probably no secret to the people that watch the podcast regularly. We often brainstorm for the podcast. We have a planning session each week, and it seems like we maybe could just jump right in and do our own individual things and have our territories scoped out or whatever it may be. But actually, once I've gotten into the mode of brainstorming, it's really hard to tackle a project, a podcast, or a project at church, or whatever it may be, without that step. I feel like I need that energy and creativity that comes from more than just my brain. It comes from multiple people bouncing ideas off of each other and taking things to another level. So yeah. I think you're really doing yourself an injustice to jump in with both feet on a project and skip over the brainstorming
process. Probably a good time now to insert one of the tools that we talk about in this particular chapter related to brainstorming, and that's mind mapping tools. And that's a real critical part of our podcast brainstorming sessions, where we're throwing a lot of stuff up there in kind of a disorganized fashion. If you'd see our maps before we kind of go through the organization process, it would be just a jumble of different ideas, concepts, and then slowly we figure out how all these things fit together and understand, you know, their relationship to one another. Using maybe some color coding and those kinds of things. Mind mapping is, and we've talked about mind mapping on the show before, mind mapping is just a great way to start with a very unstructured amount of information and then give structure to it over time. And it gives you the ability to kind of brainstorm without the constraints of having to line things up in an orderly fashion, like an outline or something like that.
Yep. Great electronic tools out there to do that. We have an example in the book of just someone that's done mind mapping on a sheet of paper in a real creative way. So there's a lot of ways you can accomplish that, but actually getting your thoughts down, especially in software where you can easily drag and drop and rearrange, just kind of opens up the possibilities and allows you to get things down and then put some structure to it. So yep. Powerful tool.
Yep. One other real key point before we leave this section is once you are kind of knee-deep in, you know, project selection, one important thing that comes out of each project is what we call, and this is not something that we've invented, this comes from a lot of productivity experts, something called a desired outcome. It's really one of the first things you need in this whole project life cycle is to brainstorm how the project is going to achieve this desired outcome. A desired outcome is simply a statement or a paragraph that describes what done looks like. You're essentially trying to define what success is. So when you're all done, what are the qualifications of a successful project? And that's harder than it sounds. You really have to think hard about this, what that desired outcome is. It's not simply, well, we had a successful VBS, or you know, we had a successful outing, or we conducted Bible class, or we preached a sermon, or whatever it was. But a desired outcome is, you know, what's on the other end of that? What does what is done, you know, really look like? And you want to think about that so that it's, you know, it has all of those qualifications of like a SMART goal, so that it's something that can probably be measured. It's something that is attainable. It's something that can be timed, etc. So those desired outcomes are really important for a project. So
maybe with a VBS project, you'd want to make sure that you wrote an outcome of having 75 kids attend. You know, unless you have maybe some goal to shoot toward and quantify, you don't know if you were necessarily successful in what you were trying to reach. Or to make contact with 5 new families through your Vacation Bible School project or whatever it may be. Just trying to, again, kind of quantify sometimes those things that might not be the easiest to put numbers to, but definitely measurements do help.
Yeah, I gave an example of, a VBS project, so a desired outcome statement might be something like this. Our summer VBS will provide an enjoyable and memorable experience for kids where they will leave knowing that Jesus is their Savior. Non-member parents will gain a clearer picture of our beliefs and feel more comfortable in sending their children to our Sunday school or visiting a worship service. So if you kind of unpack that a little bit, you get all kinds of things that you may want to push into this project that you maybe didn't think about before. Well, how do we get non-member parents a clearer picture of our beliefs and feel more comfortable in sending our kids to Sunday school? There are things that you may have to do in your VBS that you didn't do before that will help that non-member parent do that. So that's why a desired outcome is really an important part of that. And then leads really nicely into the next step, which is creating project requirements. How do we get to the desired outcome? What kind of requirements, what kind of things do we need to do to achieve the desired outcome?
And we have a form for that. We have a project requirements form. And one of the key things on that form, before you start saying this is what steps we want to take to achieve this, is to actually take a step back and think about what assumptions are part of the equation, that this project won't necessarily get off the ground unless certain things are in place. So those assumptions may be things that you don't have a complete control over, but that your project
is
going to
suffer
or
not.
Right. Exactly,
not
happening.
We need a certain number of teachers. We need a certain number of helpers. We need location. We need this. You know, we need promotion,
right,
et cetera. Yep.
At one VBS, I remember there was this major road construction project, and they tore up the whole parking lot in the process, and our whole church and school campus looked like it was a war zone. It was just crazy. And could we actually carry out a VBS under those circumstances? You know, timing-wise, then we've maybe got to adjust things that we don't normally have it the same week every year. But our assumption is it's got to be done when these projects are done or whatever. So.
Yep. And then the last little section we included in this chapter is the whole concept of support. Support for your project is important, because it allows the other members of the body of Christ to both rejoice and also potentially volunteer to help. So that's kind of how the body of Christ works. They want to rejoice over what you're doing for them or for the body of Christ, but they also maybe want to lend some of the skills, the gifts that God has given them, to the successful completion of this desired outcome for your project. So it's important to kind of think about that early on Where is this support going to come from? How do we communicate what's going on in the project? How do we recruit volunteers? We're going to have a whole chapter on that later on. But it's important to kind of consider support as you go along, because I've seen a lot of projects that don't have organizational support or support of key people that just die on the vine because there wasn't promotion going on, somebody wasn't behind it that needed to be behind it, it wasn't in the public eye enough, just kind of withered there, and the project just died.
You know, Martin, I think adopting this whole methodology, the project request forms, the project portfolio, project requirements, all those kind of things, being very intentional and also doing them on a regular basis, as you suggested, a yearly or bi-yearly basis or whatever it may be, that's going to bring more attention to your projects and more awareness of the fact that there are multiple projects. Maybe many people in your congregation just know that they show up every year for the hog roast or whatever it is, and they don't really think about the planning that goes into that. And so the regular addressing of projects, I think, will raise awareness in itself.
Yep. It may seem like a lot of overhead, but it really beats kind of the random nature where we just kind of, you know, bring things forward on the calendar, look for a poor volunteer that's going to grab a hold of this and run with it. It really needs to be something that the organization intentionalizes and puts a little bit of structure around so that you practice good stewardship. You know, that's what God demands. He wants us to, as individuals and as organizations, to make the best use of our resources, and that doesn't mean do everything you can and hope for the best. You know, there's a very different mentality. So, Sally, we've done something a little bit different with this chapter. We're beginning to gather some resources. You've mentioned a few already, right?
That's right. So as you are reading through the chapter and thinking about doing your own project portfolio or project requirements or whatever, we started an online location for resources connected to the book, and we'll be adding it to it as we write each chapter, but you can find downloadable versions of these documents that you could take and modify or use as is so that you can begin to institute these things in your faith-based organizations.
Got them in Word format, PDF format. Did you do them in Google Doc format as well?
I did, yes.
Okay, good girl. So. Mm-hmm. As challenging as some of those formats can be, I think that's important that people have the tools that are available. So go to the chapter. If you go to withallyourheart.tech, that's the website for the book. You'll find links to both of the chapters that we've written so far, two different sways, and also links to the resource library that we've begun to create. So should have some good resources. Again, these are works in progress. If you read the chapter and you want to make suggestions for improvement, that's great. We're hoping to incorporate some of those suggestions as we go along and make the book even better. We do, related to this chapter, have an interview. We encouraged or enticed teacher James Monkey from Luther High in Onalaska, who has quite a bit of experience with running projects, in fact, large projects, so we wanted to pick his brain. We actually have a little vignette or a little case study within this Sway chapter as well, where he talks about some of the things that he's doing. So why don't we listen to that conversation now? Very insightful about how, you know, he gets everything rolling and very big project and keeps everything under control. So here's teacher James Monkey. We are very happy to have joining us today James Monkey, Technology Director at Luther High School in Onalaska, Wisconsin. Thanks for joining us, James. How are you?
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Well, our pleasure. Thanks for taking the time. I know you've got a busy schedule ahead of you, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to bring you on. But before we jump into some of your conference planning activities, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you serve, how you serve, home congregation, family, hobbies, that kind of stuff.
I've been in the La Crosse, Wisconsin area for my entire teaching career. I started a few years down at Mount Calvary Grace Lutheran School as a sixth grade teacher, and then I received the call to Luther High School And that's been 19 years now at Luther, so about 22 years total. I'm married to Duran. She is my wife of 22 years also. And I have two wonderful children, Benjamin, who is now a junior in high school and at Luther High with me. And my daughter is 7 years old, Grace, at St. Paul's Lutheran School in Onalaska.
Very good. And as technology director, does that have a class load with it as well, or you just get to play with technology all day?
No, I wish I could, but it doesn't go that way. As a matter of fact, we just went through some administrative restructuring at our school, so I have a little less administrative load. But besides the technology director, I also serve as the registrar for our high school and take care of all the AV. The duties also require that I have an extracurricular, which in this case is I do the Ignition Robotics team.
Oh, I want to be on that.
Cool. Yeah, that's been a lot of fun. We get to do competitions with a 120-pound robot as we do different competitions in the Milwaukee area or the Twin Cities area. So I also have three different classes that I teach during the day. They're all technology-related. I do have a robotics class that I teach and also computer applications, where I get to teach things like programming, web design, 3D modeling. And another semester I teach the Adobe products, Adobe Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign. So I'm kind of a jack of all trades, master of none.
So. Very good. And I'm assuming with that light load that you have a lot of free time, which you dedicate to something outside of Luther High School. We understand that you're part of a very interesting ed tech event called Brainstorm K20. Maybe tell us a little bit about that event, like when it happens and where and how big it is, that kind of thing.
Sure. I'll just give you a little history on it first. When I first started in my teaching career at Luther High, we had different groups that would meet. Typically, the athletic directors meet once a month. The principals meet once a month for the area schools. We also had the opportunity to meet with the technology directors. So I joined that group at that time. And we found our meetings on a monthly basis so beneficial, we thought, well, let's maybe do this for everyone in the state of Wisconsin. Just do it once a month. And our first go-around with this was 17 years ago, and we had 30 people show up that first year. And each progressive year, we've been adding roughly 10 to 15% to that number, so much to the point where we're at about 750 to 800 attendees at the conference. And if you throw in the vendors, we're about 1,100, 1,200 people.
So. Wow. And it's a single-day event or a multi-day event?
It is a multi-day event that's held usually at the end of February, beginning of March. Seems to be a really good time of the year so that as we're gearing up for our summer projects, that we have the opportunity to listen to what new technologies are on their way out and different, you know, other things that we as a technology director might need to do for our working with our email servers or anything else that we have in the background, so to speak. This really isn't a conference designed for curriculum. It is really designed for the IT directors and for the guys who are in the trenches and working with the equipment, with the software, and having to support that in the background.
Okay. So before we jump into maybe the mechanics of the planning and so forth, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are eager to understand how you can increase attendance to an event like this year over year over year to the, you know, growing from 30 to whatever. Any tips, tricks? How are you doing it?
You know, quite frankly, it's going to be what works best for everybody else, and that's word of mouth.
Okay.
Really, it's that consistent growth that we've been able to achieve. Originally, we were doing it for the state of Wisconsin, and then we started having people from the neighboring state of Minnesota say, hey, you know, we would love to come to that too. And we invited them, you're more than welcome to. Then it kind of grew to the UP of Michigan, and we had people coming from up there. The one that I know that came from the furthest away as far as an attendee was from Tennessee. And we don't really market to that area. It's primarily for the Midwest. But we have had vendors even they would fly from England. We've had so.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty unique what's happening.
And what are the Very dates good. This year?
This year's date actually falls right over the top of leap year. So it's a three-day conference that starts on February 28th, 29th, and March 1st.
Okay. Very good. And as Martin alluded to, our focus on this episode of Wells Tech is planning, and you're talking to two very novice planners who managed to survive our first Wells Tech conference this past summer, and it was a whole lot of work. What about you guys that manage a lot larger conference on an annual basis? How soon do you start planning for the next one?
We pretty much start after about a month or two off. And get ramped up for the next one. But what makes our group fairly unique is we have been the same people planning this for all these years. And all we've done is, as we've grown, we've had to add a few more members in order to take on some of the additional responsibilities that you incur when you have a larger group of people to work with. But it's really cool because everybody kind of knows what they're supposed to do. And each year as we grow, we can add just a little bit and tweak some things. And our meetings are very very good as we go through them because, the people we work with all have their niche. For instance, one of the people in our group works very well with the political side of technology and the state of Wisconsin and some of the surrounding states also. And that's kind of her niche. We've got several people who are highly skilled technically, and so that's their focus. We've got a few other people that have experience with vendors, so there are liaisons to the vendors. Again, you know, the Lord has provided such a super group of people to work with. It makes this planning part much, much easier.
So it sounds like it's really important to gather the right people, have the skill sets, et cetera. I'm sure you learn year over year some new things that you need to put in place and some new responsibilities. One of the things that's probably needs to be a consistent thing is the tools that you use for the planning process. What kind of tools do you need? And I'm assuming that your committee is virtual. You're not always gathering in one place. You have some people that need to get online and you do those kinds of things?
Actually, we're all local to the La Crosse area.
That makes it a lot easier. Huh?
It does, but from time to time there are some Skyping sessions that go on if somebody's unable to be physically where we're at, and that works pretty well. But as far as technology to handle our conference, the number one thing is going to be the conference software itself. I get to serve as the secretary of our committee, so most of the registration for that conference has been landing on my shoulders over the years. And at first, you know, dealing with it was not that big a deal for 30 to 50, maybe 80 people. But as we started to grow, we started to look for software that could help us and really make that process of, you know, we're a tech conference, we should use technology. So we wanted people to be able to register online and to be able to have that good experience. So we've used several different software packages over the years as time has gone on. Most recently, we're using a software package called cVent. It starts with the letter C and then V-E-N-T. And software like this isn't necessarily cheap, but what it does for us as a conference, it gives us the online registrations. It allows us to be able to sell booths to our vendors. It gives us the opportunity to manage all of the speakers and the meals that go along with this, the agendas, the communication that needs to go out to everybody. It really is an all-inclusive package that without it, we would really, really struggle to do this. Because I still remember the days of doing this stuff manually and setting up my own individual databases and Excel spreadsheets. And it gets to the point where it's unwieldy and difficult to manage. So besides that cVent software package, we also use something called Basecamp, which is if you go to basecamp.com, it's a nice software set that allows us, when you're trying to organize meetings with people and give people to-do lists and dates to hit that you got to make, you know, certain events that have to happen in preparation for the conference. So those things really, really help us besides just using programs like Outlook for email communications and so forth.
Very good. What about any tried and true tips that you might have as a planner of such an event or an event at your high school or whatever it may be that you need to plan? Are there certain steps that you don't want to miss in that early stages of pulling things together? Or?
Well, if you're a detail-oriented person, it really helps. if you miss the details, the work on the back end that you do in preparation for the conference makes a huge difference on the front end when you're actually at the conference. Again, as the secretary, a lot of those details, I try to make sure that everybody knows what they're supposed to do when they're at the conference, and we've got lists placed in the areas where we need them, and people know when they're supposed to be, where they're supposed to be. I worry about a lot of that stuff, and it's I see you shaking your head because you know what it's like when you're at that conference.
I can relate.
Boy, I sure hope I didn't forget any details. But you know, after going through this year after year, you'd think it would even get easier as time goes on. The meetings that we have prior to our conference, I would think, would just get shorter and shorter and shorter, and eventually we would need hardly any of them. It pretty much stays the same. Something always comes up, and something new always gets thrown at us. We have vendors, for instance, who want to start communicating more via social media, and that was kind of a new twist that we've been throwing into our conferences as we've gone on. So there's always something different coming along, and just be prepared. Be flexible, and it's your conference will go off, and there's never a perfect one by any stretch of the imagination. You know, we do our best, but you know, you take it as it comes.
Sure.
Just a final question, James, as we think about this conference coming up in February, how do people stay on top of that? When are registrations open, and what's the website that they would go to get involved?
Well, registrations are open to anybody who pretty much wants to come, knowing that the focus, again, is on the IT part of it, not the curriculum part. And we'll be taking registrations for attendees roughly at the beginning of December. And we have early bird until the end of January, so you've got a couple of months to get in. And the cost is usually right around $300, and it might sound like it's an expensive conference, but since we're the IT guys who put the conference on, we actually did this for ourselves. So the fact that 700 or 800 other people want to come along, that's fine. They're welcome to, but because we do it ourselves, we make sure that the cost of that is pretty much as inclusive as we can make it. And that includes all of the meals, all of the sessions. So there's nothing additional to necessarily purchase or buy. And we make sure that we feed people really, really well. So you'll never go away hungry from our conference. Again, December 1st would be the time to register. And you can do that from our brainstormk20.com website. And that's going to be going through a bit of a change in the next couple of weeks here as we're doing some updating for our next year, but you can certainly glean some information from past conferences from that site.
Very nice. Well, blessings on your work and your planning for that conference, and of course your work at Luther High School there in Onalaska. I know that keeps you busy as well. So thank you again for carving out some time, and we'll catch up with you again as the conference gets closer, perhaps, and see maybe some of the things that are going to be offered for this coming year.
Yeah, and Martin, you were one of our speakers in the past, and we certainly invite anyone who would want to be a part of our conference. And the name Brainstorm really is the heart of it, where we're sharing things with each other in order to improve our technology in our schools. So again, everyone's welcome, and And thank you again for the opportunity to be interviewed.
Yep, our pleasure. Thank you, James.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, James, for taking that time and giving us some insights into what is a really neat event. I was to it a couple years back, 3 years back maybe. Just an amazing number of people that they serve there. And James has a lot of project management experience, and we're happy that he shared a little bit with us.
Yeah, always neat to hear about those kind of things. I don't envy him after doing Wells Tech Conference. I know how much work it was, and we worked on it for a lot longer than a year. So kudos to them for having their process down pat like they do.
Yep, very good. Thanks again, James. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the next segment of our show, which we call News in Tech. Our News in Tech comes from Microsoft this week. And Microsoft had a big announcement talking about some releases of new hardware. One of the most exciting was something that they call the Surface Book. We've talked about the Surface tablet before. This is a little bit of an escalation. They've upped their game a little bit here with the Surface Book. It's a little more expensive as well, but what it is a both a tablet and a laptop. So if you're looking at the screen share here, you see somebody writing with a pencil, a tablet folded down on the surface, so it'll fold into itself, but you can also pull itself totally off to be what they call a portable clipboard. So you can pull it off the keyboard and it becomes a little clipboard. Looks really nice, kind of a funny little hinge that they've got here that adds some balance to it. You can fold it all the way down, you can flip it over. It does come with the pen, it obviously comes with the keyboard itself. 14 hours of battery life, runs Windows 10, it's a touch screen obviously. All kinds of different accessories, has a dock, the pen as I mentioned. Looks pretty nice that Microsoft is kind of maybe showing the other vendors how it could be done. The price is, what was the price? $14.99 for the low end, goes up from there. So yeah, this is kind of premium, mid to premium level laptop area. They also released a Surface 4, which is an update to something that I've talked about before, and that is really just a tablet only, but you can add a keyboard to that. That starts at $8.99. These are all about 13 inches, 12 to 13 inch devices, so if that is something, I know a number of people here in the office are using Surfaces now, Surfi, I don't know what the singular is, but they're using these in the office because of their portability. They got great battery life. They run well and are very travel friendly. So a lot of our folks who do some traveling are considering these kinds of devices.
Very good. I read a little interesting news tidbit, not maybe good for a chuckle anyway. I came across in my news feed that Google actually. Their Google.com domain came up for sale, and there was someone, a student, it says in the article that I read, who was watching that domain name, and when it came up for sale, bought it for all of $12, and the sale went through, and it said for 60 seconds he owned the domain, and then Google realized what happened and refunded his money and canceled the transaction, but they also gave him a donation for finding a bug in their domain service, their domain name service. And so he got this donation and he donated it somewhere himself, gave it to a project, something related to India, I think.
Yeah, $10,000 he got from Google for you know, giving it back. And then Google matched the $10,000 for this nonprofit in India for
right.
Underprivileged children, I think it was, but
right.
Interesting. Yeah, that is a good reminder to all of us that you know we do have to pay attention to our domain name registrations because they do not last forever, and they do expire. So pay attention, and this is another reason that maybe the the name that you have registered the domain under, the email address, the technical contact who gets notified when registration is up, ought to be maybe a centralized email address. So if it's a person, maybe the tech person in the congregation who registered the domain name initially, but they moved on or whatever, maybe they don't even have that email address or don't check it very often, you could lose your domain if you're not paying attention or getting notifications from that, because they don't usually send it in the mail. It's usually an email notification saying, hey, your domain name is about to expire. And if it's a good one especially, you don't want that to happen, so you want to stay on top of that.
And just one more point off of that, Martin, is that you have to be really knowledgeable about who you have your domain registered with, because there's a lot of companies that surf that public database of domain registrations and send you phishing type scams,
right,
where they send you scare tactics. You need to renew it. You need to renew it with us. And what they're really trying to do is steal that domain registration business from the company you have it registered with. It looks legitimate. It looks like perhaps your own company. So you have to be really knowledgeable as you're reading those messages and go and check it with the place you have it registered with, not with this random company that, I don't know, I get that question pretty regularly, that sends out these mailings and emails and things to intimidate you. They kind of use scare tactics. So
yep, we get
be
that.
Knowledgeable.
Yeah, if you're connected with FinalWeb, and you know, a lot of our congregations are, and you got your domain through them, you'll only hear from them. You won't hear from anybody else. And they're very good about not letting your domain lapse, especially if you're hosting
right.
them. So
they actually take care of it for you as part
right.
of your hosting fees. You don't have to do anything to renew it, but you do need to check it and make sure it's up to date with
yep.
contact information and things.
Yep.
So.
All right, let's move along to our Wells Now segment. What's happening in Wells?
And I'll just share my screen real quickly to share the important announcement that the newest movie from Wells, My Son, My Savior, is now available. It's available to order in bulk at $2 per movie. And I know many congregations have taken advantage of the Come Follow Me and Road to Emmaus videos, which are part of this video series. And this is something that they've worked into their outreach efforts. This one is particularly geared for use around Christmas this year. So there's information on the Wells website about it, as well as a link to a printing company that's come up with a professional postcard that you can order with imagery from the movie. So if you want to give away the movie as part of your Christmas outreach efforts or whatever, you can use these postcards that tie into the movie directly. I think the window of opportunity for ordering those postcards for printing in time for Christmas is coming up at the end of October. And then all of that information is on the Wells website, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes. So you want to at least begin to give some thought to that. And if you want the postcards, make plans for getting those ordered fairly quickly. So.
Very nice. Let's go to our picks of the week.
And, you know, Martin, sometimes picks are a little more difficult for me. I have to stop and think, what's the latest things I've been doing and that's been helpful for me? And actually, the latest thing on my docket is this is a pretty busy week of speaking for me. I will be at the local Lutheran High School, Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School, tomorrow for their career days. I always look forward to that every year. They do this with their juniors, bring in a lot of people from the community in all types of different careers. And I show up with my little Wells Tech logo on my laptop and tell them what I do, whatever that is. And so I thought I'd share with you a little about that presentation. What I do with them is I invite them to play 20 questions with me. And I have a variety of questions laying on the table, kind of hidden from them in different categories. I have skills and jobs and education and advice and even a Lagniappe category. And I invite them to pick it up. And if they ask me a question from the back of the card, I give them a piece of chocolate, because chocolate is the answer for all types of training, just so you know. So I thought I'd share a couple of these.
That could
one
be
of the
your
questions,
tip right there, just chocolate. You don't have to go much further.
Well, that's what it says. Play 20 questions for chocolate. That's okay. That's what my sign says, and I have it there to tempt them. So it's usually a pretty good dialogue. These kids, you know, they're a little reluctant to jump in and engage with you, most of them. Some of them have a little more gumption, but it relaxes them and gives them something to look forward to. They get chocolate in the process. Anyway, a few of my favorite questions. how do you improve at public speaking? I tell them that you do public speaking and you force yourself to get out there and speak, or maybe you sign up for a podcast that ends up lasting almost 8 years already, and you'll get better over time just by doing it. What's your favorite thing about your job? Well, after I tell them how great my boss is, then I tell them my favorite thing about my job is that I get to work with all kinds of technology, which is just super cool. Kind of a small shop, and it gives you access to a lot of different technology projects. So that's a lot of fun. How do you continue your education? Well, I told them to make sure they continue their education no matter what, and to do it formally with different programs through colleges or whatever, but also to look for online opportunities because you can learn just about anything via the internet. So just some encouragement there. Some of my favorite are in the advice category. How can you learn a skill thoroughly? And that one is an easy answer for me. You have to teach it to someone. If you have to teach someone a skill, then you better know it a whole lot better than they do and order to be able to explain it well. So if you want to learn something thoroughly, teach it to somebody. How can you be looked at as an expert? Sometimes you just need to build up your credibility. And I think the best way to do this is to give away your knowledge. So find a way to share your expertise and others will begin to ask you more challenging questions, which you'll go and research and share more with them. So, and then of course, my favorite LangYamp question, which everyone needs to know, what's your favorite image editor? And that will be pigmonkey.com. So we make sure they leave with a big monkey grin. If you didn't know that about me, now you do. Go to pigmonkey.com. Who so that's just a little taste. Yeah. Nice. Little taste of 20 questions with Mrs. Draper. And you can buy yourself a piece of chocolate because you passed the test. That's my pick of the week.
Thank you. I like it. My pick of the week is something I've used probably not every week, maybe, but a number of weeks out of every year. And I've used it for a number of years, and that is a subscription from Amazon called Amazon Prime. So are you an Amazon Prime person?
We were for a year. We decided not to renew it this year. So we kind of go back and forth. It depends on how much ordering we have to do.
Exactly. Chris, I'm thinking, you know, holiday season, this comes in really handy. We do almost all of our holiday shopping online and a lot of it through Amazon. Basically, what Amazon Prime is, it's for $99, so basically $100 a year. You get basically free shipping. 2-day shipping, so it's expedited shipping on a lot of their products. It's not all their products, but a lot of their products. But there's more, I probably take advantage of some of these other things more than I do the free shipping. So you get the free shipping, but you also get what they call Amazon Prime Video, kind of a Netflix competitor. So you get access to a lot of movies, TV shows through that. So Debbie and I will enjoy that. And their collection is growing and growing. I don't think it's as great as Netflix, but I think there's a lot there that you can watch. They also have, and I used this over the weekend when we were driving out to Michigan for a little rest and relaxation, a little extended weekend, Debbie and I, unlimited music streaming. So kind of a Spotify competitor. It doesn't have the huge library that Spotify or Apple Music does. It only has just over a million songs, but a lot of the songs that I like are on there. So you do have the ability to create playlists. You can add your own music, and you have unlimited skips and streaming. You also have unlimited photo storage. So if you take pictures and need a place to store those photos online, you can do that. And that's a great deal, unlimited. And you also have the ability to have 800,000 free ebooks. So a lot of the titles that they have through Kindle are available in this collection. So kind of a nice collection of different perks. They do have file storage as well. So we find it well worth it just in the shipping alone, but you get all this other stuff thrown in there. And, you know, it's a good deal. I mentioned, you know, Prime Music. We'll include a link in the show notes about a lot of the new things that they've been adding to Prime Music. You can add it to any of your devices. There's apps on iOS and Android, and, of course, the Amazon Fire stuff. No ads or anything, no playback restrictions. It just comes as part of your Amazon Prime subscription. So if you haven't checked it out, it's worth a try, especially you know, in a heavy shopping season where you do a lot of your shopping online. Amazon Prime, give it a shot. It's my pick of the week.
Good stuff. Thank you for sharing. Skipping right over community feedback, because we have an announcement about that at the end of the show. I'm going to head into ministry resources, Martin. I think you actually found this from our friends at Concordia Technology Solutions, a blog post on why pastors should blog with an embedded webinar. So you can learn more about
that. Yeah, that's
kind of
the neat part about this. It's not just a blog post, but basically it's a blog post saying, hey, we did a webinar on this topic, why pastors should blog. There's a slide share that goes along with this, so you can see the actual slides they used. So I watched a portion of this, and I flipped through all the slides. Looks like excellent content. We've had Peter Frank was the host. We've had him on the show before, but Amanda Lansky? Who's a content specialist for Concordia Technology Solutions, was one of the people who presented here. And it goes through the why and different ways to do this and some of the rationale and how to go about doing it. Just kind of a good thing. If you are a pastor thinking about, you know, what's this blog thing about? Should I do it? What should I blog about? You know, I don't really have much to say. What are the potential uses for it? Sharing content, you know, how do I spark discussion, et cetera, et cetera. This would be a great thing for you to read through or to listen through. Why pastors should blog. And there's an ebook as well. So check it out.
Definitely. And that's a good video to watch. We perhaps should have chosen that as our video of the week, but instead we found one from Bubble Us, which is one of the one of several online mind map tools, and you get a little introduction to mind mapping and to Bubble Us and how it works. So it's a short little video, but if you aren't familiar with mind mapping or familiar with Bubble Us, it's bubble.us, then check out the video that we have on our show notes website.
Very good. Which leads us to next week's show. And Sally, I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that in 414 episodes, we've never done a show like we're going to do next week, correct? Where it's just community feedback. That's all we're doing.
You threw me a curveball. We might have done one.
Maybe.
But I could be wrong.
We'll have to examine the record. We'll have our picks, but because we can't do a show without picks. But basically the topic of the show is feedback from you. And we want, and we've collected it, we're doing this every month now, so we don't have a community feedback section each show, but we kind of gather it all up and run through it for our show. I'm looking forward to that. We've already got some good feedback, so you still have time to get your feedback in for next week's show. Go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, and click on any of the links at the top or social network links at the top. You'll recognize them, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, those kinds of things. Or just send us an email, wellstech@wells.net would be a great place to go. Email us and give us whatever feedback you want. It can be about this show, previous shows, new topics you want us to discuss, articles you found, programs you've started, your experiences with project management, just all kinds of feedback are appropriate for this show. Obviously, they should be ministry and tech related, but that's kind of what we're looking for. That's what we're after.
So. Yep. And you know, Martin, I'm just perusing that lovely Wells Tech website, and it reminded me that we have a photo challenge going on. Quick mention of wellstech.wells.net/photo challenge, where you can submit photos of fall and Reformation. So I bet you've got some nice fall pictures in your arsenal, Martin.
I do.
Have to get them submitted.
Yeah, I know. I've been very remiss, but we have had many people submit their
already.
Photos. We've got
beautiful,
got a growing collection, so really appreciate it. that. Mm-hmm. All right, Sally, I think we've done enough here. I'm going to call it a day. And just one last reminder, you know, submit that feedback and come back next week. Reminder that if you want to join the show live, 4 o'clock every Tuesday afternoon, Central Standard Time, is when we when Sally and I get together for this little conversation we call Wellness Tech. I want to thank everybody listening, watching, for your participation. Blessings on your week, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.